Tonight on Ham Nation, we've got another club spotlight, ARN's Young Ham of the Year, and getting your connectors soldered the right way. Stay tuned. Ham Nation's up next.
Ham Nation is brought to you from LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure that they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether they're working in the office or remote. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode 465, August 5th, 2020. PCAR's Club Spotlight and AR Newsline's 2020 Young Ham of the Year.
Hello, everybody. It's Bob Heil, K9EID, and I'm talking to you from Belleville, Illinois, the new studio. We're across the river from the Great Arch of downtown St. Louis, and always fun to be here. A lot of times I'm not because we are so busy. My goodness, we're busy, busy. But we had a wonderful show tonight. George is out in his shop warming up the soldering iron. We really are, because we're really going to smoke some solder. So just stick around, because what we're going to do is we're going to solder some coax connectors. So you just might want to pay attention, because it's probably not the way you do it, but the way that some of the big boys do it, like K3LR and stuff like that. But we're going to do that. And I think you're going to have a lot of fun with some of the other guests. And one of them is going to be Amy, who is she's of PCARS, a wonderful club who is, was it last year? They were a club of the year. So Amy is going to come back and talk to us. Don is always here making things happen, stirring it all up. And is Tamitha with us tonight?
She is by video. We will have live tonight the 2020 Amateur Radio Newsline, Bill Pastrnak, WA6ITF Memorial, Young Ham of the Year, Chris Bro, KD8YVJ, coming up in a little bit. So stay tuned for that. Going to be a good show.
So cool. I remember Chris when he was about this high, and now he's about this high.
He's exactly.
Oh, that's going to be great. Well, we also have to have... Who? Gordo! Yay! Gordo, how you doing, buddy?
We're doing fine, and I'm wearing my Hawaii outfit because a week ago... That's all the way from Hawaii on 2 meters and 432. So, wow, 2,500 miles, tropospheric ducting... Finally, end of July. Back to you, Bob.
I put up a 2-meter Yagi today. Well, I think it's 6 or 7 elements. I probably won't be able to work them from here, right? No. Oh, well. We're going to come back and learn more about that. But I think what we should do is bring Amy with us and talk a little bit about her wonderful club. Amy, how are you doing? And thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
We've been working, trying to get things together with you a couple of times, but here we are. And your club is Club of the Year, is that right?
That's right. We were Club of the Year. We've gotten some really nice awards along the way. We have a great club. KBF is our club call, and hopefully you've heard us on some contests.
Well, I got some things here I want to show you. Let's get this all set up, and we're going to run through these slides for you, and you can talk about what we're seeing there. Go ahead.
Okay, this is our president, Tom Sly, WB8LCD. He is also the ARL Ohio Section Affiliated Clubs Coordinator, so he's got a lot going on right now. He is one of the founders of our club. And at this point, we have almost 200 paid members. We have also, I put some things about our antennas, and we have a picture later about that. Just to summarize, we have all kinds of special interest groups that we do normally. At this point, we're trying to do everything we've done before on Zoom and using a combination of Zoom and a little bit in person, continuing with some classrooms and meetings and preps, not really doing much with our lab right now because we're not spending as much time at the club site as we would like. And there's some pictures we put together to show. We have a lot of members, so we can easily get, 50 people to go to Dayton together. So every year at Dayton, we put a picture together. We have everybody meet in the same place around, I think it's around 9 o'clock. You can see our president in the front, Tom Sly, there. And then everybody gathered around. And our friend Scott Yonnelly from the Great Lakes, he's right there in the middle, too. So the bottom half, you can see one of our events that we do every year is coming up next week. And that is a cruise-in at the A&W. So we usually have a few contests where we do something with the best installation in the mobile. The whoever works the most contacts while we're at the drive-in restaurant, we do all different contests like that just to have fun and try to get some prizes going. So that's something we like to do too. Our antennas that we're on the slide right now with our 200-foot tower that's at our club site. And this is also one of our founders, Jim Aylward. It's a KC8PD memorial tower that we dedicated to him when he passed away. Also, we have 80 and 40 meter dipoles that are connected to our tower. And then we have a tri-band Yagi antenna. We have a triplexer inside of the club site that we use for contesting. We have four different operating positions. We have three IC7300s. So Ray Novak will be very happy to know that. We have the whole thing set up so that people can bring their own SD cards with their personal settings if they would like to use those in the 7300s. We then can reset the radios to just club settings so people can use their own special settings. We have our computers networked on Nook computers too, so we can do all the logging we need to do. Our fourth station has a Kenwood TS-590, so we have the one station that we can set up a little bit differently. We normally have a whole, this is our Freeze Your Acorns Off event. This is one of the events that we actually were able to have this year before everything shut down. This is a QRP event. It's an outdoor event. So you can see in little pictures, there are people in tents, people with snow on them. There's all kinds of snow on the ground. And you can win this contest sometimes with only two contacts because there's not a lot of competition the years that the snow is deep. So you can go outside and make a few contacts and then come in. And we also have a contest for the best dish. So if you don't want to operate, you can just make some food. And some of these pictures are showing giant tables, and we just feed all of the cold people. So that's a really fun event, too, that we invented for the February time. And then the next one, I think we have the Ohio State Parks on the Air slide. Yeah, this is Team Kate IV. Kate IV is Ed Pollock from DX Engineering. We have a lot of members from DX Engineering. Very fun. We obviously buy a lot of equipment there to use. This was our contest called Ohio State Parks on the Air. And this is where we go out into a park, we activate the park, and then we operate. And you can kind of see me in some of these pictures, but we actually were the winning team last year. So that was very exciting for us to put up this giant antenna and then operate. And we won with Punderson was our local park that we activated. So that was a great time. During COVID, we decided to make up a few little contests to keep ourselves busy. We normally have nets every Thursday night, 2-meter nets. We decided to do a check-in award because everybody was stuck inside. So we did, If you checked in consecutive 7 Thursdays, you got this award. So we ended up giving away almost, I think, 20 some awards because we had so many members that checked in. And because we have an EchoLink node, we actually get some DX check-ins too. So we had some check-ins from Dominican. We had check-ins from Ireland. We've had check-ins from all over, people that are just curious that like to check in. So of course we're excited to hear from them. And this is normal field day. I think we all kind of know we were excited to get our rules changed this year. So most of us worked out of a home location. So that was a little bit different for us. But a normal field day, we're a 4A. So we set up four, I would say, large stations in a field in Freedom Park. We normally have a lot of food and a lot of socializing going on. We have loggers and operators for the entire event, I would say. Also, we have the Goddess Station. We have VE sessions. We do a lot of bonuses with having the dignitaries and passing messages. We have a great relationship with the trustees too at our park. And it's a park that's not used very much, but it's perfect for field days. So we talk to them and keep a relationship through the year. And they're actually very sad that we weren't able to operate this year, but we definitely enjoy our park and keep up our relationships with them.
Well, the best thing that I see about all of this is that you have a lot of gathering of families. There's young people there and teenagers and all of that. So I applaud you for that, Amy. It really looks like you have a lot of fun.
We do. And that's something that we are definitely happy to share with any other club. If anybody would like to borrow our ideas or get some hints on how to do these things with their own club, I would encourage you, send me a message, email me, anything. We're more than happy to encourage anybody else to kind of share with us because we feel like we do a lot of great things and we do have a lot of fun. So and you can also become a member for $20. It's the most fun you can have. So you can also join us.
There you go. Well, I was there once. And we need to come back and do it again. That's for sure.
But anytime.
We appreciate you being here. Hey, Gordo, are you still with us? You got any questions for Amy? I bet you do.
Yeah, it sounds like your field days have really been exciting. When we did the last field day under the pandemic, how did you space everybody apart? Multiple stations, or everybody just operated from home?
Exactly, Gordon. That's exactly what we did. We had everybody at home, and then we took advantage of the new rules to get a conglomerate score. So we did. We all reported in for PCARs so that we would have one big score. But we did. We kicked around ideas with getting together, but it was just too risky. But we are excited that Gordon is our guest for September. So we're all very happy that we're going to be having Gordon on a hopeful Skype with us.
Terrific. That's great. Thanks, Amy.
Thank you.
Well, Amy, thanks so much for your time and your information. And if you were listening closely, and we hope you were, you have any questions of how to increase the whole awareness of your club with other hams around, they've got some ideas, obviously, because they were Club of the Year. So they have a lot of ideas. And I want you to come back and give us some other ideas that you're doing when we finally get to open up. So thanks so much for being here. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Dr. Bob.
All right. Thank you. We do have this club spotlight that we like to bring other clubs onto the scene. And we want to know what you're doing. And Club Spotlight's the place to do it. All you got to do is email me, hamclubs@twit.tv, or Mike All, K9EID at ARRL. If you have any idea that other clubs should know about, or you just want to talk about your club, we want to hear about it and bring you up and give us some pictures and all that right here on Club Spotlight on Ham Nation. So thanks a lot to Amy and all the group that put it together. And we're waiting for some other wonderful things from that club, because you know they're going to be roaring when we finally get through all of this. Well, we want to see what Gordo's got. Gordo, you have a lot of things going on these days, and what else is happening in Costa Mesa?
Well, we're all okay out here in California, and congratulations to the East Coast for surviving the hurricane and tropical storm. Tonight, we're going to talk about mobile antennas, but we're not going to talk necessarily about the part you see, but a hidden part. And our Bible is the American Radio Relay League's ARRL antenna book. Get your copy, whether it's an older one or a newer one. This is the Bible when it comes to mobile antennas. And we're going to talk about a phenomena that occurs when people use their SWR analyzers and they sweep the mobile antenna on, let's say, 40 meters, and they see the resonant point sort of. It sort of takes a dip and then comes back up again. But it never gets down to like 2-to-1. It's like 2.5 or 3-to-1. They see the dip, but it's not all the way to the bottom. Well, we use the SWR analyzer here from MFJ. And people say, well, this is the cheap one, the $99 one. And I got to turn up the volume here. And they said, you know, is that really going to do a good job? How do you know what frequency you're on? Well, here's how you tell. Hear that? The radio goes silent. Yeah, I know what frequency I'm on, 28420. So you don't have to buy necessarily the $300 MFJ. $300 MFJ. You can get the $99 one that covers all of HF. And while it doesn't have a frequency counter, it does have provisions that you could actually drive a frequency counter. So let's go ahead and take a quick look, and then we're going to take a look at mobile antennas. And I've got a couple here that we'll show you right after we get through with this portion of the show. Well, the most popular mobile antennas are the little $20 ham sticks. I mean, they're a bargain. If you wipe them out on a tree, no problem at all. Just go out there and get another one for $20. This mobile antenna will probably not need what I'm about to talk about at the base. The MFJ and the ham sticks and all of the fiberglass helically loaded antennas usually look like a good 50-ohm match to match your 50-ohm coax. And we're going to talk about coax with Bob a little bit later on. And when it's mounted up nice and high, these little MFJ ham sticks or any of the other ham sticks, this one is actually a name brand ham sticks, they do a fabulous job because all of the power going into them comes out fairly efficiently on the top part of the antenna. This one from Diamond Antenna does a great job again. And when you mount your mobile antenna up relatively high on the vehicle, it's going to look like 50 ohms. So these antennas do a good job. And usually when you sweep them on 10, 15, and 20, they take a nice dip all the way down to 1-to-1, showing me about 45 ohms, which is common for that type of an antenna. When we get to the larger antennas, such as Charlie's high Q antennas, and we've got a couple of them here, including a military one, when you begin to add the capacity hat and then the big tall whip on top of that, you're going to increase the efficiency, but it's going to throw off that 50 ohm that you hope you would have match at the base. So anytime you're working with any of these much larger antennas where you can play games with them by adding the capacity hat. And by the way, that capacity hat down on 40 meters lets you reduce the number of turns that you're making on the contactor by about 2 or 3 turns. That means more efficiency up at the top of the antenna. So today we're measuring one, and oh my gosh, it's only down to, it looks like 3-1. That's not very good. And again, this is my little $99 inexpensive SWR analyzer. As long as you got your HF radio nearby, stick a hairpin in the back, and you'll hear it sweep when you hit the right spot. We need an antenna coil. No, not. This is called a loading coil that you see there. This is a manual one where they tap into the different bands. But we need a coil of wire somewhere else. And there it is. You see it down at the base. That's called a shunt feed. And it goes from the hot part of the output of the base, the hot part of the antenna, right to chassis ground. So if you were to measure your coax at the radio end, you'd go, whoa, this thing's like a dead short. But believe me, at HF frequencies, that coil, and that coil is about 0.8 microhenries, that coil does some real magic. But you do have to expand it or collapse it if you're going from 75 meters maybe up to 10 meters. Yes, these antennas will work without the coil. Most of the coils are made by hams themselves. But the coil brings the feed point from what's typically about 10 to 20 ohms up to 50 ohms as soon as you connect it from the hot part of the coax coming through to the mount to the antenna base. And also notice that this ham on the Tar Heel antenna has a nice wrap of coax on the right side of that mount, and that acts as a RF choke to keep the energy from coming back down the coax. So we take a look at these antenna coils, and they're not really magic. They're usually about 8 to 10 turns around your big thumb, and one end goes to the hot part of the antenna set up at the base, and the other one goes right to ground. And what occurs is that'll then take your HF impedance on 75 and 40 meters. It'll bring it up to 50 ohms. And on 10, 15, and 20, your setup probably won't even know that it's there. A lot of folks have experimented with some of the older ones. Gosh, remember the Swan antennas, and remember the Webster band spanners? They had all sorts of coil arrangements down there at the base. Some hams have gone very exotic and actually have pre-wired all of the antennas on a coil right down there at the base. Well, this one, you almost got to shake your head going, holy smoly, all this coil matching down at the base to bring it up to 50 ohms. Let me tell you, this fella can work the world mobile. I didn't have a near wide enough lens to show you the antenna on top of all of those resonant inductors at the base. Well, MFJ comes to the saving of those of us scratching our heads saying, why can't we get that impedance up to 50 ohms? Why is our radio, even though it's resonant right at 7,200, and I go to 7,200 and the SWR is about 2 or 3 to 1? No problem. This goes in series. We recommend keep this as close to the antenna as possible, not at the radio, and then make a list that G would be for maybe 40 meters, H would be for 75 meters, A, B, or C. You get the idea for 10, 15, or 20 meters. This is an RF impedance transformer, and in just a moment, we're going to show you one live, and that's going to bring the impedance up to 50 ohms. And this is what we use in our communications van. And the big question is, coils like a L network to ground, or should I use capacitors, about 560 picofarads? The capacitors, MFJ has one that works with capacitors, and we'll show you one there. And you click, click, click with an antenna analyzer, see where it takes a nosedive on frequency, and that is what you want to write down in your logbook. So when you plan to play radio for a little while, you go back aft, set it to the correct band tap, and you're ready to roll. Well, that's required checking all the different band taps for those of you that are going capacitors shunt to ground. If you're doing the coils shunt to ground, generally, once you find the sweet spot, you won't have to touch that antenna matcher again. It'll work 10 through 75 meters, at least 10 through 40 meters. 75, yeah, I've got to give it a little bit more inductance, but 10 to 40, it'll roll right up. So I like the coils because also out when we're doing the desert routine in January, Quartz Fest, which is soon to be called Quartz Pause. But wait a minute, we're still going to be there. It won't be a Quartz Fest officially. We're all going to get together, and when the wind is blowing, it creates static. Well, the coils will bleed off that static to ground right at the base of the antenna. Now, we also recommend always dressing your coax with these chokes. Or, as you see here, you can actually make up your own coax choke that you see there. And there they've got the actual choke and the coax run through it several times. And you can't quite see the coil in the background, but that's how we're able to get these little coils to work. So what's inside of them? Well, the inductor coil is a giant toroidal inductor. And on the front, I go to 40 meters and I go click, click, click until I find, oh my gosh, the noise came way up. Now I put on my SWR analyzer and take a look. Caution, especially with the MFJ design, as with any design that has click, click, click switches, do not try and run 80 watts and start clicking through there because you'll notice that smoke will be coming out the back. You never hot transmit on a antenna switcher that you're switching. This is called the MFJ automatic antenna extender, and there's our toroidal inductors all back to back, and this gives you fairly good range, but the most range you're going to get is with this particular MFJ model, and that's the model MFJ 907. That's the one I like. Now, for those of you that don't mind every time you change bands having to go to a new A, B, or C, D, you can do the capacitors, and these are not very large capacitors, so this one's rated at about 300 watts max. I mean, I would consider it maybe 200 watts max. You could replace those capacitors if you wanted to, and again, they're anywhere from 30 to 2,000 picofarads, but the one I like is this one right here with a major size toroidal inductor, and once you find the spot for your particular antenna, then you won't have to be changing it when you change bands. Well, as you know, a lot of motorized antennas out there for changing bands. This one is not motorized. This one comes from Hi-Q antennas, and they have an adjustable coil that you run up or down, and that moves the contactor right here on the antenna, this guy right here. And the higher you go in frequency, the less turns you need of coil. And of course, the whip affair goes on the top there. But this is heavy. This is all stainless steel, and it's a monster. And Charlie, for the last couple of years, we haven't seen him at ham shows because he's been moving antennas and antenna design for the military. And look at this guy right here. This thing is lightweight. It's aluminum, goes down to, let me take a look, 3.5 megahertz. And this one is also manual, and it's got a little scale on there. And again, the reason we do manual is, number one, you don't have to worry about the drive motor running it up and down. Number two, it's good exercise for you to get out of your vehicle and adjust to a new band. And most of us, we put little marks on the actual coil here so we see where we have the contactor at the right location. And on the military units for boats, and also one for a very specialized aircraft, Charlie's got all of the markings right on it, so you can come pretty close to any one of the frequencies. And this one right here goes from 15 meters, 21 megs, all the way through 75 meters, 3.5 megahertz. And this is certainly the smaller coil, but it has a very nice impedance match. But sometimes it needs a little bit of help with the impedance matchers. So in the old days, the Swan radios, they had the same type of a matching device that you'd put in series. And that way you'd get the most of the energy coming out of the antenna. And that's known as mobile antenna efficiency. So that's the very latest on antennas. To learn more about how many picofarads of capacitance or microhenries of inductance at the base of the antenna shunt to ground, you can go on to Charlie's website at www.highqantennas.com or even write him sales@highqantennas.com. And he's in the ham business still, but he's had a lot of time spent on military. And I love these new military ones because they're lightweight. And the best part of this is for when I'm teaching classes, when I want to tell students what it's like to hit resonance, as I come through resonance, all of a sudden the HF radio, and it's an ICOM, springs to life and you'll hear the noise. And I can always tell a high Q antenna with steep skirts because, boy, it's got to be right on versus the ham stick where you slide the whip in and out and 1 or 2 inches doesn't make a difference. But the more of the high Q, the better the performance and the more voltage you're going to get up to the tip end of that whip. So that's my antenna story. And Don, we should get an antenna on probably one of those cars of yours, right, Don?
Well, I don't have the Trans Am anymore. I have this little Saturn Sky, which is very, very light. No antennas on it. If I put one of those big mama high Qs on there, I'd probably just turn it right over. But I do miss doing the mobile HF. That was always a lot of fun. And I do need to get a radio back in my car. That is for sure. What I want to do right now is I want to introduce you guys to a very, very good friend of ours, and particularly proud because he happens to be this year's Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year. That's Chris Bro, KD8YVJ. There he is. You've seen him on this show many, many times. Hey, Chris, how are you?
Hey, John, how are you? Thanks for having me on tonight.
It's nice to see you. Before we get into a little bit of a Q&A, I want to basically do what we normally do at Huntsville, where I want to go down some of what you did to earn the Young Ham of the Year award. So bear with me for a little while. It was his dad, Jocelyn Bro, KD8VRX, who got him interested in ham radio. He car trips, basically, listening to his father operate mobile and kind of got the bug. Chris is a member of the Dayton Amateur Radio Association, the Westchester Amateur Radio Association, and the Ohio Valley Experimenters Club. He's an honor student entering his senior year at St. Xavier High in Cincinnati. And he helped restart the school's amateur radio club, W8GYH. He's earned recognition for his many achievements in promoting amateur radio, including the Hiram Percy Maxim Award in 2015, the Ohio Section Special Recognition Award in 2016, Great Lakes Division Young Amateur of the Year in 2017. That year, he was invited to join the Dave Coulter Youth DX Adventure in Costa Rica, where he worked the station with Bryant Rascal, KG5HVO, another Young Ham of the Year recipient. In 2018, Austin Harris, W8CCS, they made more than 3,100 contacts, which I believe at that time may have been a record. Don't quote me on that, but I know it was pretty close if it wasn't. He also helped in the planning of an amateur radio on the International Space Station contact in 2016, spoke with astronaut Kate Rubens, KG5FYJ, while she flew overhead. He's the social media director for the Youth on the Air organization, is a contesting mentor for youth who are involved in that program. He's also a tour guide for the National Voice of America Museum of Broadcasting in Westchester, Ohio, actively assists in mentoring young operators at its amateur radio station, WC8VOA. He also works annually with his dad on putting youth on the air in the annual Jamboree on the Air in October. He's been a presenter at the Dayton Youth Forum. That was 2017. Orlando Hamcation, also 2017. Recently started working a part-time job at his local regional airport and was invited to take flying lessons. So he's pursuing his private pilot's license and exploring a career in aviation as a commercial pilot. So, Chris, do you have any time for ham radio in the middle of all this? I know that you've won some awards for your ham radio stuff, but you got to be making time for ham radio, I would think, huh? A little bit?
Yeah, there's a little bit. It's been a little difficult, especially with work and school and everything and all the priorities I'm taking on now. But yeah, every now and then, especially like the local nets and that type of stuff, been staying active with that.
Now, how long have you been licensed? It's about 6 years now, isn't it?
Yeah. So I got licensed in 2014.
Right. And that is when we met you and your dad at Dayton. That's a picture of me presenting Chris with the award. I'll get into that here in just a sec. But I want to talk about when we met Chris. That was you had just missed your technician's license test by one question. And you and your dad were strolling around at Hera Arena. And he ran into me and Bob Heil at the Ham Nation booth and started talking. And that's how we met. And now here you are 6 years later as Young Ham of the Year and a Hiram Percy Maxim Award winner and so much more. So you've done a lot in your brief 6 years in this hobby, a lot more than some people do in a lifetime. So you're to be congratulated for that. What's next as far as ham radio goes for you? Have you given any thought to that?
So probably like you said, going into commercial aviation, not really quite sure yet, just kind of weighing out my options and just seeing where I go.
You can do a lot of HF from the cockpit of an aircraft. Let me tell you something, especially if you're flying a commercial plane, you can go just about anywhere you want with that. So that should be a lot of fun. Let's get back to the pictures because I want to explain these pictures of me presenting Chris. That is not the Huntsville Ham Fest like we normally do. Huntsville, of course, is canceled for this year. That is at the wedding of our friend Neil Rapp, WB8 VPG, just a couple of weeks ago. My wife and I went up there for that. And, of course, you see we're doing our best to have our masks on for social distancing and everything. But that was a great experience. We've got a picture of us with Neil, me and Chris and his dad with Neil. This picture here I particularly like because when Chris won the award, he did not tell his parents. That's his parents, Jocelyn and Kim, sitting at the table with us at the wedding, and they're finding out at that moment that Chris is the Young Ham of the Year award winner, which I thought was just priceless. That was a good move on your part, my friend. Just absolutely priceless. They had no idea. They knew that I was bringing him something, but they had no idea what it would be. I said, yeah, I got something for Chris. I'm going to bring up to him. And so I said, here, let me just give this to you now while we're before the wedding gets started. And why don't you show your mom and dad what that is too? And so there they are. And they're if they didn't have the face masks on, their chins would be just about down on the floor. That's for sure. But show the picture of us with Neil. There's the happy groom. His new wife is off, being congratulated for something, I'm sure. But there's Jocelyn, KD8VRX, with Chris and Neil and me up in the Cincinnati area there at the wedding. And that was a great weekend. And I'm so glad that I was able to present this award to you in person because I wasn't sure, depending on who won, I knew that you were in the running. We would just have to mail everything to them because there is no Huntsville Ham Fest this year. So it's icing on the cake for me to present it to you, being as I've known you your whole ham life, and also because we got to do that up at Neil's wedding. So congratulations. What are your plans for college?
Thank you.
Have you given any thought to that?
Still currently looking. Well,
you got to get through high school first, I suppose.
Sure. So, yeah, exactly. That's kind of my plan right now. I'm like, okay, senior year starts in... Was it like 2 weeks now? I got calendar up here. Yeah, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So try and get through that first, and then we'll figure out college. But I'm looking at Purdue, looking at Embry-Riddle, Ohio State, Kent State, Bowling Green, and a couple other ones. But just trying to get a feel and see where I want to go. And it's been a little difficult just because with COVID, nothing's open. So we're like, oh, we'll go look at colleges. And they're like, we're not taking anybody. So just trying to weigh it out virtually as much as we can.
You know, I saw something on Facebook the other day. It was a meme, and someone had printed up a sign that said, upcoming COVID-19 information for the upcoming school year, please see below. And below was a magic eight ball. So that's kind of where our lives are, I think, right now. But I know that you'll make the best of it. But we wanted to get on here and kind of celebrate your achievements and congratulate you and see what was next. I'm so proud of you, Chris, just to to know you your whole ham radio career. And you and your family have become such dear friends of us. And I think your mom and my wife are now BFFs, pretty sure. So I wish we lived closer together so we could see each other more than just, you know, when Dayton rolls around. But it was such a treat to see you at the wedding and present you the award and get to hang out with you and your family. And you played piano for us at the house, which I had no idea you could do. Multi-talented young man here, ladies and gentlemen. So congratulations, Chris. Let me see if Bob and Gordo have some questions for you here. Let's jump in. Bob, anything for young Chris?
I'm definitely here. Wow. There's so much that you've done, Chris, and I congratulate you for that. And I think what's going to happen as you move on into your life, ham radio will be the door opener for a lot of things that you're going to see and hear. And I appreciate you, your family and your friendship over the years. And I do hope that once you get to be some exec somewhere that you don't forget all your ham radio buddies here.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Bob.
Well, I will never forget the night in Huntsville a couple years ago. All the power went out in the hotel. Now think about this. Hundreds of room and there's no power. Well, everybody's sitting around in the lounge and is, what are we doing? What do these guys do? They go over and Bryant and they were in the dark spot. I saw that little light over there. What's going on? They got on their computer, found a remote station in New York, and they were working DX in the dark off batteries. I mean, what else can you do but sit around in the dark? These guys didn't sit around in the dark. I had so much fun sitting there watching you guys. So just thanks a lot for the memories. And as I said, don't forget us. Come back once in a while. And who knows, one of these days we'll fly on one of your aircrafts.
Sounds good.
All right. Hi to your family.
You should see his flight sim station at the house. It's pretty sweet. I was envious. Chris, thanks for coming on tonight. And again, congratulations for your Young Ham of the Year award. Just the most recent in a long string of awards. Again, Hiram Percy Maxim and the others that you've won. And I know that the future is wide open for you and you will make the best of it. I have no doubt. And I say this on stage every year at Huntsville. If you look at the news, you're always going to find a bunch of bad news about young people. Well, the bad kids are in the minority. The vast majority of the youth around the world are just like Chris. As a matter of fact, this year it came down to a tie between Chris and another young man, and it was so close that it was one of the rare times that we ever have a tie, but it actually came down to our chairman making the tiebreaker, the tie-breaking vote. And I had nothing to do with that. I never have anything to do with it, which is exactly how I like it. But the Young Ham of the Year Awards Committee chairman called up one of the judges who had voted for Chris as his choice and picked his brain and called up another one of the judges who had submitted the other young man as his choice and picked his brain. And they were both so adamant that their choice was the right choice, that it was literally, it could have come down to a coin toss. But Chris was just a little bit ahead, I think. Something swayed. I'm not exactly sure what it was, again, because I'm not part of that process, but it was that close. And it's rarely a tie, but it typically comes down to a very, very close vote. And I know that, Chris, you have been nominated several years in a row. Most people who are nominated for this award do not win it the first time. And so there's a lot of thought that goes into presenting this award, and we want to make sure that we have just the right person. I know that this year we absolutely do. So again, Chris, congratulations, and be sure and I know your folks are watching, but be sure and tell them hello for us, would you?
Will do. Yeah. Thank you again, Don. Appreciate it. All right.
Congratulations, my friend. It's good to see you. KD8YVJ, Chris Bro, the 2020 Bill Pastrnak, WA6ITF Memorial Young Ham of the Year. Congratulations again. There he is.
There he goes. So cool. Great choice. And let's switch gears a little bit now and take a look at the news of the week from Amateur Radio Newsline and the solar update from Dr. T. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 2,231, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, August 5th, 2020. The Atlantic hurricane season once again signals the time for extra amateur radio alertness.
By the time Hurricane Hanna was downgraded to a tropical depression near the border of the United States and Mexico, at least four people were dead and four others were missing. Amateur radio operators were emerging from several tense hours of communications that began on the morning of Saturday, the 25th of July. The amateur radio station at the National Hurricane Center, WX4NHC, activated and had the support of the VOIP Hurricane Net, where hams activated to provide ground truth data, including surface and damage reports. Hams in the Corpus Christi and Brownsville areas, or those with relays in those areas, called into the VOIP Hurricane Net using Skywarn reporting criteria. Hams use modes including Echolink, IRLP, and All-Star, with two other hams using the private telephone network Hamshack Hotline. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Christian Kudnick, K0STH.
Hurricane Isaias is on track to scrape up the eastern seaboard of the U.S., and Newsline is following that story. After a trial run was to expire, hams in New Zealand just got more time to enjoy 60 meters.
July 24th has come and gone, but 60 meters is still alive and well in New Zealand for some amateurs. The band was accessible as part of a trial period that was to have ended on the 24th of July. Hams and ZL Land now have a three-month extension, meaning they're able to continue using the band until the 24th of October. Radio operators need to have a sub-license obtained from the New Zealand Amateur Radio Transmitter Society, which extends the station's primary license to include 60 metres. Hams who wish to participate in the trial and would like a sub-license can download an application form at nzart.org.nz. The trial period has been put in place so NZART, Radio Spectrum Management, and the band's primary users can explore the feasibility of permitting amateur use there on a secondary basis without creating interference for primary users. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Meacham, ZL2BHF.
Still in that part of the world, Australian call signs are undergoing some changes.
The Australian Communications and Media Authority has made some administrative changes to call signs, which the authority says is designed to give more flexibility and options to amateurs who are being given a more active role in managing their own call signs. All licensed hams will have the ability to obtain a three-letter call sign. This change removes the association between the call sign suffixes and amateur qualifications, whether the license is for foundation, standard, or advanced level. The result is that a ham can now have a call sign to last their lifetime. This includes any moves the amateur may make from one state or territory to another, a change that formerly required a change in call sign. The changes are also designed to make access to digital modes easier for foundation licensees. The foundation call sign structure has not been compatible with all modes of digital operation. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm John Williams, VK4JJW.
And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at arnewsline.org. With Christian Kudnick, K0STH, Jim Meacham, ZL2BHF, John Williams, VK4JJW, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 7-3. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now here's the solar update from Dr. Tamitha Scove, WX6SWW.
Space weather this week is definitely beginning to pick up, and all of the news is in the northern hemisphere. As we switch to our front side sun, we have a coronal hole in the north that's rotating in through the Earth strike zone. It's been sending us some fast solar wind over the past 24 hours, and it's even brought aurora down to mid-latitudes, and it could easily continue to do that over the next 24 hours. On top of that, we also have a coronal hole, a smaller one that's more equatorial, that will also rotate into the Earth strike zone here in the next 3 or 4 days. So we could easily be having unsettled to disturbed conditions in through, I don't know, the end of the week or so before things settle down. But believe it or not, that's not even the biggest story. Have you looked at the northern hemisphere and the bright lights you see there? Look at that. Bam, bam, bam. Can you say hello, solar cycle 25? These are all solar cycle 25 sunspots. They're at high latitudes, and every single one of these regions have been numbered, including the latest region. That's region 2770. Now, as we switch to our far-sighted sun, this is Stereo A, and it's looking at the sun pretty much from the side. You can see those three regions far better in this view. And that last region, that one has been firing off some B-class flares, so it's not a lot of radio noise. It wasn't enough to cause any issues for the Dragon splashdown the other day, just in case you wondered that. Thank goodness things are still quiet, but I'm telling you, we're going to start seeing things pick up here pretty soon. On top of that, look at the bright region rotating into Stereo's view in the south. Yet another solar cycle 25 bright region. So how can we say solar cycle 25 is finally beginning to ramp up? It's here, and right now we're dealing with pretty quiet space comms for space traffic, but you never know, we're going to have to start really being on our toes. For more details on this week's space weather, including how those bright regions will affect dayside radio communications, come check out my channel or see me at spaceweatherwoman.com.
Yeah, it's a great website, spaceweatherwoman.com. And make sure you follow her on Twitter as well. And look her up on YouTube, because all of these videos show up on YouTube as well. So if you miss something with her, you miss a lot. So she's a really great, great follow. Before we move on to Smoke and Solder and a word from ICOM, we have some sad news from the Newsline family. We lost a voice that you hear on Newsline, particularly when we talk about severe weather in the South. Bobby Best, WX4ALA, passed away on Sunday at his home. He was only 49 and leaves behind a family. And we don't know really a whole lot about what happened to Bobby, but it was shocking news to wake up to this morning for me anyway. I think most of the people found out last night, but I hadn't checked in until this morning when I woke up. Bobby was a good guy. He was a broadcaster and a meteorologist, and he was he did a lot of weather stuff for us over the years on Amateur Radio Newsline. So we're gonna miss him. So our hearts and thoughts and prayers go out to the Best family. There he is, right there. WX4ALA, one of the good guys. Way too young, 49. So prayers to the Best family. All right, George is up next, but first, a word from ICOM.
Get out and be active with ICOM's new IC705 and its optional multifunction backpack. The IC705 is your perfect QRP companion, as you have base station features and functionality at the tips of your fingers and a portable package covering HF 6 meters, 2 meters, and 70 centimeters. This compact rig weighs in at 1 kilo, or just over 2 pounds. With RF direct sampling for most of the HF band and IF sampling for frequencies above 25 MHz. 5-watt battery operation with BP272 or 10 watts with a 13.8-volt DC supply. Modes include single sideband, CW, AM, FM, as well as full D-Star functions. A large 4.3-inch color touchscreen and live band scope with waterfall. Integrated GPS with antenna and GPS logger, micro SD card for data storage. It comes standard with the HM243 speaker microphone, and it supports QRP and QRPP operations. The perfect accessory for the IC705 is the LC192 optional backpack with a special compartment for your IC705 and room for accessories for SOTA activations or just a day in the park. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information about this and all the great ICOM radios.
And ICOM would like to remind you to register for QSO Today's groundbreaking Virtual Ham Expo. The expo will be filled with virtual exhibits and guest speakers all from the convenience of your computer, tablet, or phone. Visit QSO Today, hamexpo.com to register. And also, ICOM wants to invite you to enter after each episode of Ham Nation to win some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats at icomamerica.com/hamnation. You'll also learn how you might win in the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. For August, we've got a goodie here. It's the ICOM ID5100A innovative 2-meter 70-centimeter mobile with touchscreen. VHF, UHF, dual band, dual watch, D-Star transceiver. It has a large intuitive touchscreen interface, simultaneous FM-FM, FM-DV, or DV-DV dual watch receive, built-in GPS, optional Bluetooth board. There's an Android app available for download, and DV-FM repeater list function is built in, as well as SD card slot for voice and data storage, DV fast data mode, and much, much more. So go to icomamerica.com/hamnation after this and each episode and register to win. Sign up, good luck, and don't forget to follow ICOM America, Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. For Smoke and Solder tonight, I have some of these right here, Bob, and I need a little help on how you might install these on a piece of coax. Really wouldn't work that great on a ladder line, although you might get it to stick in there. Have you got some ideas?
Well, the problem is that you put this stuff together, you do all the nice soldering in the little holes, and you forgot to put this on. Now what do you got? You know, you've probably been there, right?
A bunch of times.
Yeah. When I was a young ham, I had a really great mentor. He was a chief engineer at KMOX CBS Radio in St. Louis. He taught me a lot of things. One of the things he taught me is how to properly put coax connectors on RG8, 213, any of that. And I always kind of felt a little bit shy about it, because a lot of guys made fun of me. That's not the way you do it. You got to do it like the book tells you, and you got to solder those little holes and all that. And I went through my life just being quiet about it and not always doing it until about 4 or 5 years ago. I was able to visit Tim Duffy at the multi-dollar contest station, K3LR. K3LR. You guys know about it. And I look over in the corner, and here's about, I don't know, 50, I'm not making that up, coax is coming in. And guess what? He was doing that the same way. Wow. So maybe I'm not crazy. Maybe Larry Burrows that taught me how to do it right wasn't crazy. Well, here's how we do it. And I really hope you make some notes here, because this is a really cool way to do a coax connector. First of all, we don't have to worry about the shell, as you'll find out. Because what you're supposed to do is cut this stuff all down so that you solder in those little holes, just four places. Because you don't know when you're finished if you soldered it or not. You got to prepare it like this and cut it off and solder it a little bit. But you can't do too much. You're going to melt all of it. That's the other problem. But it's 3/4 inches of phenolic and 3/4 inches on the tip. Here are the tools you need. Be sure you have all these available, and a ruler to make the 3/4 inch measurement of each of them. Here's what happens. First of all, I use you could put it in a vise, you could do whatever, but you put it together. You won't have to worry about it. I use a little screwdriver, so it's going to be really hot. And I didn't take all the time here to get it all, but you'll get the idea. You want to solder that particular end so that it's got some solder around on it, and it's going to get really, really hot. and probably advice is the best way to do it, but this is another way you can do it. So that when you finish, you've soldered that whole the whole connector around all the sides, so it's ready to go. Always, when you solder something like that, use a rag. It's going to be hot, but wipe the connector or the whatever you're soldering. You want to clean that solder off. So there you got 3/4 inches of insulation, 3/4 inches of the center conductor, and 10 that center conductor. But look what we do to the shield. We cut it off, oh gosh, at the about probably somewhere around 1/4 inch to 3/8. Separate them all. Again, that little screwdriver, or I like to use an awl. And get them all separated and cut off as even as you can. And you'll see here, it's about 3/4. Okay, 1/2 inch. Now, it all slips together very nicely and very easily. And you don't have to worry about leaving that shell on the other end. It's like, oh, no. Put it all together. Push it tight, and if you've had those, made the dimensions right, you're ready to go. The first thing I do is I solder the center conductor, and as you can see, it's right to the tip. So when I solder it, it will happen because we've pre-soldered the conductor. And the little trick I also learned from my great mentor, Larry Burroughs, back in 1957, 58, I was doing stuff. Notice when you're doing that, turn it up so that the heat rises, right? And when you do that, that solder sucks right up into the center of the connector. Turn it so that the heat helps you make it happen. Wipe it off. Remember, it's going to be hot. Now, we pull this down. We've pre-soldered that. And all you have to do now is solder the shield all the way around on the conductor, and you're going to be in good shape. Pretty simple. I didn't go to the extremes on this, but you get the idea. Show you over here when we get all finished. It just works so well, and I've been doing it for a long, long time. As I said, it's been back in the 50s, and it's one of those things that when you're all finished with it, why it's a nice looking solder all the way around, and you by golly know that all that shield is soldered, not just 4 little holes. And I think that's what I find best about it, is that I never was sure, and you can't be either, know that that is 100%. So I don't understand why more people don't do this. And I do it with RG58 or Mini-8 or any of that by using the adapter and all that, and solder the adapter first, and then away you go. George, do you do anything like that over your lifetime? Have you done anything like those?
I actually have never done that with a PL259, although that's one way you could be sure that the shield is actually connected to the shell like it should be. Now, I have done some pretty odd stuff with RG58 and PL259s because, you know, there's really not enough there on that cable to work with a PL259, but you still got to do it. I would say one of the best tips, and you mentioned it there, is to tin stuff before you actually go to solder it. Tin your shell or the outer part of the PL259 where you're going to solder. Tin your center conductor there before you ever put it through here. And that's going to make it go so much quicker, so you don't have to heat up things as much. And the other thing is, use good connectors. Don't use the cheap ones with the plastic in here that's going to melt out before you get it hot enough.
Yeah. Oh, golly. Well, I just thought we'd bring that. I've got an awful lot. I did this, I don't know, some time ago, and I got a lot of emails about it, like, hey, you're crazy. You shouldn't do this. But I got a lot saying, hey, that looks like a good idea. Let me know more. So there you are. And we're just trying to bring information here on Ham Nation, and I hope you can share this with your friends. And if you want to know more about it, let us know. And also know that George, Gordo, Don, Amanda, Val, all of us are available to come to your club. It's real easy now. Gosh, back in the day, we actually got on an airplane and came to some of your club meetings, but now we do it on Zoom or Skype, and it's wonderful. So put a little activity in your club and knowledge that maybe they don't know or they're afraid to ask. Hey, we're there. And just email myself or any of us. If you get it to me, I'll make sure it gets to all the others. But we're here to help you. This is what this show has been about for all these many years, is to bring you information about ham radio. And so the producers keep giving us time, and ICOM and DX Engineering, all of our wonderful sponsors, they keep it going. So I want you to keep watching, share it with your friends. So that's basically what we got to share with you. And I think we better bring Amanda in here and see if she's been soldering her connectors. But I think, Gordon, you know that Amanda, she's got her own solder person. Did you know that, Gordon?
You bet.
Yeah. Yeah, she don't.
I do. I have a personal solder technician. His name is Jeff.
You carry the toolbox for him, I understand.
I do. And I plug in the soldering iron and I get it out and I warm it up for him. So cool. He's not coming home to a hot stove, but he'll come home to a hot soldering iron. Oh, goodness. Well, this rings some great questions out, though, Bob. So you were talking all about PL259, so I'm going to assume that's your go-to connector. You'd prefer that over the in connector any day, right?
Well, it depends. I have in connectors, and back in my 2000, you got to have in connector. If it's called for in connectors, yeah. And that's a little bit different situation, but it's not that I prefer them. It's what the piece of equipment calls for.
Okay. And Gordo, this question's for you from earlier. What MFJ or other analyzer do you use for an antenna analyzer?
I use pretty much the MFJ 269. It's an older one. I've got a pair of them here. And about once every 6 months, I've got to take it apart and fix the battery connections inside and some of the wobbly boards. But the MFJ 269 series with the twin meters, one showing SWR and the other one showing impedance, allows you to do a lot more than just check SWR. And I found many a fault of coax by doing some of the calculations with the SWR analyzer. I know that they now have a version that graphs it electronically, and I'm usually just wanting a quick reading rather than to study it on the roof for an hour. So the MFJs just work great for me.
Absolutely understand, and they really work during field day, by the way. If you're trying to see if you were down in the CW portion of the band or if you're ready for the phone portion, get it, use it. You'll thank your life for it later. Let's see. I have a question for George as well. And this comes from Arnie Palmer. Thanks, Arnie, for this question. Is there a way to dress up a cold solder joint so that it can warm up?
Yeah, and I noticed he said a special coat or a cover. I would just use a sweater. No, actually, the only way to fix a cold solder joint is to put heat back on it and apply a little more solder. Because when you first solder it, you're going to be boiling out some of the flux that's in there. And you're going to need that in order to get a good solder joint. So if you're trying to repair a bad solder joint, if you can't remove the solder that's there, then, you know, apply a good bit of heat and add a little more solder to it or a little flux, just trying to melt the solder that's already there and get it to flow and stick is, it's kind of, it's not going to really work. You need some new solder with some flux.
There you have it. And, you know, George, I really debated on whether I should ask you that question because I wasn't sure if it was a fluke question. I thought he's got to be joking, right? And when you said a sweater, I thought there really isn't a fix to this problem. And it was a joke question. All right. That's all the questions I had tonight. I did want to make a little promotional thing about something I'm involved in with TWIT this Friday evening. I'm going to be on the After Hours Shelter in Kitchen episode. That's right. We're having a cooking show. If anybody watches Chopped, which I bet a lot of you do, we're having a cook-off, and we have two great judges, comedian / food critic, cooks, chefs. So I'm going up against Ant Pruitt, who is a phenomenal host on TWIT, and also Lewis, and I can't remember his last name, Lewis, I'm so sorry, but this is the funniest part, is that I made a bet with them. So if I win, they both have to get their ham radio license by Halloween. I think that's a fantastic wager. Yeah. So
yeah.
I have to win. So I need all of our Ham Nation viewers to get on there and watch this Friday evening and get on the chat, because viewer voters do count. So hopefully you'll all get on there and vote for me so we can make sure some other TWIT hosts become ham radio operators. Yo, and plus, I'm going to do a good job.
You got it, Amanda. In fact, I'll even supply the books free to those that win.
Yeah, I love that, Gordo. That's awesome. So we've got that going for us, too. We might get two TWIT hosts become ham radio operators by Halloween if I can win this cooking show cook-off, Shelter and Kitchen. So be sure to watch it. I think it's, Victor, what is it, 4 p.m. Pacific time?
Yeah, I believe
time?
It's 4 p.m. on our live stream. And
okay.
Then later on we put it on YouTube. And it's Lou Maresca. He's our host on This Week in Enterprise Tech. I also work on that show on Fridays.
Okay, thank you. And they give us secret ingredients. So that's the biggest thing, is I have this Amazon box. So if anyone has any superpowers with X-ray vision, look me up, because I could use them so I can know what those secret ingredients are sitting in this cardboard box. I'm a little nervous, but I bomb so terribly on the treasure hunt that I can only do better. seriously. All right, let's go over some nets, everybody. We've got the D-Star Net 14, Charlie. It's already underway. We have DMR on 31.0.12. We have 20 meters going on 14.268, and the 40 meter net on 71.92 thereabouts. I did not see a final on that frequency, but you know where to look and check them out. So with that, Bob, it's so nice to have you back. And it was a great show. Love the club spotlight. Amy did a fantastic job. So glad she was on.
Yeah, we're happy to get the clubs. I want more clubs to drop us a line. We want to get you on here and spotlight your club. I think it's a good thing, and it helps your club. That's the whole thing. And we'll be back here again next week talking about ham radio. What else? So in the meantime, take a look on the bands. I've been on the air a little more now that I have antennas and all that. But we'll be talking to you next week, and throughout the week, give us a buzz. Until then, 73. That means best regards. This is Bob Heil, K9EID. Bye-bye for now.
And tighten up your soldering iron tips. Just give them a good crank. Ooh, yeah.
Keep it tight.
Keep every time.
And don't forget your flux. You gotta have flux.
Hi, I'm Jason Howell, host of All About Android. Each week, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Ron Richards and Florence Ion, as well as a whole rotating cast of guests, journalists in the Android space, experts, developers, and even people working on Android behind the scenes at Google. We talk about everything that has to do with Android, and you don't want to miss a single episode so you know what's going on behind the scenes. That's twit.tv/AAA. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss an episode.